marketing communication works in two ways, short term, long term. And we must not forget to get them working together.
Hey everyone, today we're talking with Tom Broach, a marketing strategist with loads of experience in some of the world's best advertising agencies. We talk about an article Tom wrote on his blog called The Wrong and Short of It. It's a deep dive into the world of brand building and sales activation, performance marketing and long-term brand building, and how these two speeds of marketing and communications need to work together. It's a super fascinating episode, so buckle up and let's talk branding. This podcast is sponsored by Creative Business Company, but more on that later. Hey everyone. Hey Tom, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Great to be here.
Great. So for the people that don't know anything about Tom Broach, could you quickly introduce yourself?
Okay. So I'm Tom. I've been a strategist or an advertising strategist or communication strategist in agencies for about 20 years, places like AMB, BBDO, BBH, Lea Burnett, Adam and Eve, DDB. And about 2 years ago, just under 2 years ago, I moved to a place called Jellyfish, which is a kind of new era sort of marketing communications company, digital first.
Interesting. Could you tell us maybe a little bit more about like your job at Jellyfish? What do you do on a daily basis?
So I'm VP of brand strategy at Jellyfish, and I'm part of a team of about 25, growing team of about 25 brand strategy people, which is an unusual team because Jellyfish's history is more in the performance marketing space and data and technology. And as we've got more into to media and to delivering creative and content, we've also developed a brand strategy capability to link all of those things up and to try and tell consistent, coherent narratives across our capabilities. So for example, in a pitch situation, the brand strategy person will be trying to help weave together all those different specialisms and capabilities. And when we're working on more pure creative or brand projects, it's much like what you would see in an agency normally. Sometimes the work we're doing is much more media, in which case we'll be leaning more on our media strategy partners, but you'll have a kind of a triumvirate of media strategy, brand strategy, and data planning. Is how we tend to make it work. So it's a new thing for a more historically performance marketing type outfit like ours.
One of the biggest challenges in my own career has always been to convince business leaders that brand is one of the most important assets in their company. And even though dozens of studies have shown that getting the right strategic positioning can get you a 5x performance on your ads, sometimes convincing executives to prioritize their brand strategy can be challenging. That's why this episode is sponsored by Creative Business Company, a strategic consultancy on a mission to make brand more accountable and more effective. They take the lessons they've learned from over a decade of experience of working with brands such as Morningstar, Shell, and Formula E, and adapt them to smaller, fast-growing companies to help them get more attention, convert leads, and drive sales. So if you're trying to get budget for brand, create messaging that converts, or lower your cost of acquisition, check out creativebusinesscompany.com for ideas, evidence, and tools that will help you make an impact.
Interesting. Did you feel like a big difference coming from some of like the world's most well-known traditional advertising agencies?
Yeah, I mean, it's what are the differences? So those companies tend to be selling one thing. So they're selling ideas and creative execution of those ideas in certain channels, often a narrower set of channels. So moving to Jellyfish, obviously personally quite a big move because of the much wider array of channels and technologies and capabilities we've got. So there's a whole load of learning to be done. I mean, I'm really just scratching the surface, to be honest. And I mean, that, you know, we've got such expert people who know really deeply about search and PPC and content marketing, and we've got brilliant social experts who are real like experts in individual platforms. So there's tons to learn. And I'm trying to learn as much, and all of us in brand strategy have got different areas of expertise, but we've all got loads to learn. And then I guess the thing that I'm able to bring a bit of alongside the other brand strategy people is maybe some more, and use the word traditional, I guess it's more fundamental principles of marketing that some of those new specialisms may not have come across. And may not know so much about. So some of the really familiar names from I know from your you know, guests you've had on the podcast, about Byron Sharp, people like Les Burnett and Peter Field, trying to bring some of the principles that they have developed to bear and bring those to bear on this modern world where people have got incredibly specialized and some technical skills that they've got. But they don't necessarily have that kind of that the base level understanding from some of the other parts of the marketing world. So it's trying to blend old skills with new skills, bring existing learning to new learning, and get the whole modern digital marketing machine working as well as it can when, you know, to try and link it up really.
Yeah. I really like that, and I'm wondering, like, coming into this place where performance marketing is a thing and where you have people, as you said, very specialized, like, did you feel a lot of like friction or like people blocking out these IDs as being like, yeah sure, that's old school, or that's FMCG, or, you know, there's a lot of arguments that go against this. Did you feel that coming in and bringing in these thoughts and fundamentals, or
what? Not remotely. So I mean, I was like kind of brought in by somebody. So the person that runs our capability has a lot of data people, media people, brand people, and they wanted to help cross fertilize, help. Yeah. Develop people's understanding, and the thing that I've seen most of all is an embracing of some of this learning and a real hunger for it, and that kind of desire and embracing of some of those principles, I suppose I wasn't expecting so much, because in one's kind of idea of this, and it was kind of notion of this split between brand and performance, You begin, if you've not worked in a place like Jellyfish, you imagine, I think, that there's somehow some deep fundamental ideological tribalism or kind of friction or not wanting to get on. I'm sure that is the case, and certainly like in some clients' organizations where people are incentivized to like optimize slightly opposing KPIs and metrics, I can imagine that can create, you know, an organizational structures set up to create competition like that. But I haven't seen anything like that in Jellyfish. I've seen the opposite. I've seen people wanting to learn. We're sending loads of people on the Mark Ritson mini MBA course. And there's huge take up of that. So it's there's a hunger for it. You know, I think we've got 37 people on it this year.
It's
great. It's really exciting.
It's a embracing bothism, as Mark Ritson would say.
Yeah, completely.
And I think that brings us also to like what I would love to chat with you about is I read this amazing article, just one of the many, because there are so many good articles on your site, on your blog, and it was titled "The Wrong and Short of It." Could you explain like the basic premise of that article? What was your beef with Les Burnett?
Of my beef? Oh, I have no beef with Les Burnett. Well, funny enough, that article was part of the reason why I came to Jellyfish. They've been sharing that internally and gone, this is really interesting. This is kind of where we want to head. And that's partly what got Jellyfish's kind of meet together. But the reason I wrote it, I wrote it in mid-2020, it's similar to many other reasons I've written things, which is to try and simplify and summarize some of the really great and important marketing work and academic work, or sort of semi-academic work. And so, and I've done that with some of Byron Sharp's stuff. And I'd done it actually before with Les Burnett and Peter Field stuff, because I'd sort of observed that, you know, not everyone is going to read the 80,000 word version of the, you know, the full gold standard book, the long and the short of it. But everybody sort of needs to know about it, and at least in our world. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to write a simple summary of what has become known as Bothism, essentially a summary of some of the key points in the long and the short of it, the book by Burnett and Field, and also add a little bit more sort of leaning into the modern world, how this can be applied in the modern world, I guess, although it's still quite a theoretical article. And the basic premise, I suppose, is to say that marketing communication works in two ways, short term, long term, and we must not forget to get them working together. I think I've observed too much separation between long and short, too much talk about it being long versus short, too many client kind of situations where there seems to be a debate about whether you should do one or the other. And that seemed insane to me, because the book is about and. The most important word in the title of the book is and, but people seem to forget that. And some of the charts can sometimes not help that, but sort of get used by people just to be seen as this is the line that happens when you do long term, and this is the line that happens when you do short term, and they're separate. I was working with parts of it with the brilliant Dr. Grace Kite, who's an econometrician. And we've been sketching out what could a sort of modern version of some of the classic Les and Peter charts look like. I think your listeners will be familiar with what gets called the steps chart, or the zigzag chart, or the sawtooth chart, which is the two ways in which marketing works. And we were experimenting with literally just drawing a simple illustration or diagram of what if you put those two lines together and you put it into the real world of a type of company that is probably quite performance driven, and has scaled up to using performance channels, always on channels, and then is making that big leap, that big decision to get into the world of brand building, which can be a really big moment for brands, and a weirdly scary moment, I think, because they associate it with having to be on TV, which of course is not the case. There's a whole bunch of channels you can use that can help you do more of that long-term brand building stuff. And so, yeah, we wanted to kind of illustrate that, this modern dilemma of how to do long and short together, how to get the best out of them both together. And we just wanted to do it in a simple chart, which is, I think, what's become known as the ramp and bump chart. And there's a moment on that chart which is about which we're calling the performance plateau, which is this time when brands are probably maxed out in performance and now need to expand to reach beyond this more limited pool of people they're targeting within some of the performance channels, and think about how they do more full funnel through the line, upper funnel marketing activity. Yeah. It's a long-winded way of sort of describing what's in the article. But it seems to hit a nerve with people. But I have to say it's mostly Les and Peter's work, me just summarizing some of it.
Yeah, but it's definitely interesting as even like me, when I first read a lot of Burnett's work, Peter and Field, is that also for me, like what you kind of take away, and that's probably a bias as being somebody that's quite obsessed with brand building, is like, oh, this is really about the importance of that creative, long-term, out of the box, like thinking and campaigns, and you kind of almost put your own weight on it, and you forget that actually what it's both, it's at long and short. And I think that's interesting, and that leads me also to a question where it's how can that almost purely long-term thinking be damaging? Because I think we all know short-term thinking, what that can lead to, that's quite obvious. Well, we can get into that as well. But I'm mostly also curious about the pure long-term brand building thinking alone. How can that be damaging?
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny, I coined the term wrong-termism to lump together people that are too long-termist and too short-termist. I think, look, short-term thinking is like famously bad. You know, we know that it's an issue. We know that it can cause problems in all sorts of ways, not just for brands. And that's got lots of systemic reasons behind it, quarterly reporting, the demands of stock markets around the world. We know that there's a sort of, you know, a merry-go-round of CMOs that come in for a short time and then get booted off. Or there's a kind of causes or is part of this whole short-term sort of hamster wheel that brands can get on. And I think that has meant that most people forget that, or at least most people in the sort of traditional advertising world, of which I was one. Can somehow think that long-termism is therefore necessarily a great thing. And there used to be this thing, maybe it's happening less, but you used to get this thing where people would, maybe a new marketing person would arrive at a company and they go, we're not going to do the short-term stuff anymore. We're going to build the brand. We're going to do this big campaign. And they forget the importance of some of the short-term stuff. And they may spend a whole load of money, or, you know, convince somebody to let them spend a whole load of money on maybe a big TV campaign, and maybe creatively it could be very exciting, but they can forget some of the really important pieces of the jigsaw through the funnel, sometimes what seems to happen when they do that is that they don't necessarily set up the measurement correctly, and they don't set expectations correctly, and of course things don't always go to plan, and their organization may be expecting some immediate huge increase in sales or customers, and then there's a kind of upset that happens. And so it's really important to get everything in place, to set your expectations correctly, to do both. I mean, Mark Ritson talks about earning the right to do the long-term activity, and maybe doing that kind of on the sly in the background whilst you're getting the short-term going. I mean, that's one way of doing it. Ideally, you'd get your sort of leadership of the organization to be fully behind a more bothist way of thinking. So I think, and I wish I had some examples to hand of this, but I've definitely been involved. The very first campaign I was ever involved in was exactly that. It was for a whiskey brand in the UK. We thought that this big 60-second TV commercial was going to be the silver bullet that would solve everything, and it didn't. Then the campaign was canned after a year, and then the agency was fired. And maybe this is all I can trace it back to that moment, the first ever campaign I worked on.
It's a trauma for you.
Maybe there's some PTSD in here. But I genuinely have, you know, I've worked on loads of big campaigns where you make a big TV commercial and stick it on air and nothing happens. And it's probably because the creative wasn't great, and it's probably, you know, hadn't been thought through properly, but it was certainly also because all the other pieces in the jigsaw were not put in place, or the store experience wasn't right, or you were making promises that the customer experience couldn't satisfy. All sorts of reasons why things go wrong. But, you know, really thinking about the full picture and not just kind of having a piece of it, I think is really important.
I'm wondering, like, I can see two ways of like, well, tackling this problem or this challenge of like making sure that when you have a campaign, it's received well by, you know, leadership is one. You could work on setting the right expectations. That means, for example, let's say if it is a brand building campaign, maybe you avoid any like sales activation like metrics. Or the other one is more about like really working on the execution and making sure that the campaign has embedded like also this activational part or a performance aspect to it? Like, what would you say? And I know we're not gonna get trapped in one way or the other today. Yeah. But what would you say is like a right way to think about it?
Well, the latter way sounds far more sensible. Where you're really getting all the pieces working together. I mean, what we're really talking about, I think, and Faris Yaqob's good on this, is it's basically integration. That, you know, this integration was what we used to talk about. There was the big thing. I don't know, in the noughties or the 90s. Integrated campaign thinking, and that's I think what it has to be. And I suspect what's happened is that because this world of performance marketing kind of grew up from the noughties, the 10s, the 20s onwards, slightly separately from the kind of the mainstream advertising community, there were some silos that happened, and those really important elements of integration were not happening. So some of that performance activity was tied together as it should have been with more of the brand building activity. And so you end up with things that look different, things that are talking about different things, things that aren't reminding and nudging people and reminding them and refreshing the memories of the more broadcast communication that you've been doing. So I think really it's integration. Your first example in your kind of options sounded quite dangerous, where you're trying to set expectations so low that you're kind of ignoring the possibility that brand building can contribute towards sales at all. And it's a dangerous way to think. I think you that way, and there is a, you see people talking about this actually on in this ad Twitter space, where in fact it was Jenny Romaniak who said, you know, this the idea of the brand building campaign, saying there is this thing called brand or brand building as a separate entity or as a separate discipline, is actually quite responsible for this sort of, for some of the decline in appreciation of all the good things that kind of creativity or campaigns has. And so I think, yeah, separating it off, saying it's not going to sell, I think is really dangerous. I mean, if you think about, I mean, your listeners may not be that familiar with the John Lewis Christmas campaign in the UK, really famous, probably most famous advertising in the UK. You know, so every year for 10 years, that has been building and building and building. Huge kind of expectations and anticipations for the advertising itself. And it works incredibly well. And it works really quickly. It works, you know, every year. It launches around about now, sort of first, second week of November. And it very quickly drives huge amounts of campaign awareness and footfall and traffic online. And it's designed to work in a 6-week window. It's designed to get people buying pretty quickly and really, really excited about John Lewis as an offer at Christmas. So really, it's an activation campaign with an amazing dose of creativity that drives fame for the activation, and in the short term drives associations for this really important category entry point for John Lewis in the department store category, which is gift giving, and that the importance of that association actually drops massively from January the 1st. It's not obviously relevant for birthdays, but you know, so in a way it's quite a short term brand building piece of activity that drives this association with thoughtful gift giving, and then after January that ceases to be so important. So they need to move on to other things, which is probably why they're now talking about a more kind of continuous campaign around everyday life moments, and how John Lewis, the department store, is really great for all sorts of moments. And I'm sure what we're about to see on our screens in the UK is a Christmas campaign which somehow blends moments and the everyday life moments with Christmas gift giving moments. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm sure they're going to do it amazingly. But that's the intention of that brand now is to try and link up Christmas to other things, or gift giving to other moments in the year. So I think integration has to be the answer. And and not just connecting brand and performance, but finding creative ways to do that. I mean, there's a whole generation of creative people making content, writing copy, designing things, who have not yet had the opportunity to do things which are connected to what you or I would recognize as a brand idea or a campaign idea that's come from the top down. Mm. There's loads of, you know, so I'm working with people at Jellyfish who've been doing incredible things. We've got a team called the ASO team, the App Store Optimization team, who they do great things to make sure your brand, your app turns up in the App Store. And that's about writing great copy, designing great things that will both work with the algorithms and human eyes and brains.
Yeah.
And those people are now, because we just did a pitch yesterday where we were able to connect up those creative people with more conceptual creative people who are coming up with brand positioning ideas. Mm. And that's really, really interesting, because it's not easy. You know, there's lots of learning to be done. But the ASO creative people are having to take what they can from the DNA of the idea that you're giving them and try and work out how to serve that up in a way that's appropriate to the environment they're used to creating for. Mm. So I think there is a whole world of creative possibility to be had in mostly in smaller spaces, in sort of perhaps darker, more algorithmically driven corners of the internet, but it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. I love that example of John Lewis like being a real activation campaign because of also the seasonality. It's actually like what made me think when you were telling that was really like sometimes it's just letting go of this whole theory of now we're doing a brand building campaign or now we're doing the other. It's just like, what do we need to achieve at this point for the business? And that can be in part long-term and short-term. And I think that's really the gist of it. I'm wondering, like, because you mentioned, like, I think you have a lot of super smart digital people at Jellyfish really knowing the craft and the technique. And I'm wondering, like, in general, coming from a world of probably lots of traditional channels, TV, print, I don't know, out of home, that sort of stuff, going to a place where digital is probably also considered equal in a way. Like, how do you see that in relationship to the whole brand building concept? Can you build brand on digital only channels? Like, what are the challenges there?
Yeah. I mean, you absolutely can. It's what are the challenges? I mean, I think firstly, this assumption that we can't build brands on digital. It's we have to stop thinking like this, don't we? Because everything we see is now digital. Huh. You know, TV has, there's this brilliant line I love from Tess Alps, who was a media person in the UK. TV's not dead; it's having babies. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are all sorts of ways you can now watch high quality, entertaining, long form video content. Loads of different ways it's delivered, loads of ways you can watch it on screens of all sizes. That is all digital. Out home is now, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's there's loads of digital out of home. Google are getting into how you buy that programmatically in a more addressable way. Within the TV world, connected TV, addressable TV is relatively nascent, but is growing fast and is very, very attractive to brands who are taking their first steps into what you might call brand building.
Yeah.
So Meta just did some really interesting research across different European markets. There was a piece of that research that was focused in Nordic markets. They looked at, I think it's retail and telco, and they looked at the short term and the long term ROI of different digital channels. And in many cases, this assumption that I've had, and many people have had, that digital is only short term and can't do brand building, is beginning to look, I mean, it's probably changing, but it's also beginning to look really old fashioned, that view. And many digital channels are just as capable of delivering short and long and long term. I'm sure it's doing it in different ways. And certain, you know, like search is not great at brand building. I'm sure there are ways you can make it do that, but you know, that's clearly more of a, we talk about search, for example, being more of a connecting media where you're, you know, if you're searching for a brand, you're much more likely to just need navigation towards it. You've already chosen it. It's less about brand building and more about helping people get to your brand. So yeah, this notion that you can't build brands in digital is increasingly looking a bit kind of wrong-headed, I think. I saw a thing on, it was on LinkedIn, I think it was in response to a comment that the great Sir John Hegarty had made about social can't build brands. And it got me thinking, you know, what brands have been built. There's a great one in the UK, or it's probably global now, Gymshark. You know, they've been doing really interesting creative things in social, building community, huge communities of followers, which I'm sure are really helpful to create free media and word of mouth for that brand and help it grow. So it's taking maybe more time than you know, it's like 22 years now since Google became really, you know, was the thing. And it's, I don't know how many years, 17 years since Facebook sort of properly started. And it seems to be taking time for these worlds to really grow. And of course, the digital platforms, they started at the bottom of the funnel, but now they absolutely, their own businesses depend on them grabbing more share of the upper funnel now.
Yeah.
You know, they've maxed out on their share of the lower funnel. So they've got to build their own businesses by heading up the funnel, which is what, you know, I guess in a way is part of Jellyfish's story. So, you know, YouTube is a great brand building channel. I mean, there's loads of brands that are, you know, being built there. Just because you've only got 3 to 5 seconds, you can make people laugh in 5 seconds. You can land the brand message. You can move somebody quickly and land something in their long-term memory. Maybe not as effectively as if you've got 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. But it's, you know, time will come when all of the screens we're using will be kind of more easily accessible to more advertisers. And the sort of, because really what's happened is that, you know, Facebook and Google have democratized advertising.
Yeah.
They've allowed millions of new smaller advertisers to access advertising in a way that they weren't able to before. It's not really that, you know, of course, in the process, some channels have declined, print in particular. But it's a really exciting world.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing now is just that world, the pieces, the new platforms, the pieces of that, the new jigsaw being better connected, and we're just getting better at delivering creativity on them.
I created this podcast to help myself and others understand the power of brand building without all of the BS. So here's 3 no BS guides from my friends at Creative Business Company that you can download for free to drive impact. The Brand Investment Blueprint outlines the exact process they use to convince skeptical executives to invest in brand building projects and campaigns. How challengers can position for growth explains how brands can find and leverage their hidden advantage to create brand marketing that sells. And last, my favorite, How to Build a Big Brand on a Small Budget explores how to outsmart and overtake market leaders with more cost-effective marketing. Go to creativebusinesscompany.com/staff to download your free guides today. That's creativebusinesscompany.com/STEF to download your free guides today. Back to the podcast. Yeah, also curious about this one thing. I've seen this myself, like coming from a world where I worked a lot for FMCG, lifestyle kind of brands, where brand building campaigns, paid advertising was like a very logical thing to do. Now going into a space of like B2B tech, where you see, for example, a lot of, when it comes to building brand, is more on the content side of things. So creating, you know, interesting, engaging content, relevant content for decision makers. I'm wondering, like, because also, again, like, I think for you, it's interesting to come from that traditional paid media background. Seeing that, like, do you think there's a big role to play for content when it comes to building stronger brands? Or do you think it's a very hard play to win, given that you're very low in reach when you don't pay for it?
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm particularly qualified to talk about the power of content, but I, you know, seeing what we do in that space, it you know, when people are, particularly in B2B, as you say, but when people are in a category and are kind of interested in a particular area, showing up when they're searching for stuff, you know, if you're a trainer brand and you create the very best piece of you know, marathon training content there is, well, that's going to be really powerful, just obvious. And it's going to help you get up the rankings. Google loves quality content, and it will reward you as a brand for it. I think for smaller brands, clearly creating content is a really attractive thing to do because it seems cheaper. It seems less about paid, more about doing it for free. But I think it's like any content, you know, 95% of all content is shit. That goes for TV advertising content, movies, books, whatever. So I think you better try. I'd much rather you try and create some really good content than loads of average. But then in order to create some good stuff, you've got to do loads. So it's I think it's not the silver bullet that people sometimes think it is, because it's a much slower burn. You know, it can take a long time. But I've seen it personally. You know, I write content. I'm like, literally what I do is I make B2B marketing content about marketing. And it's helpful for people.
You did get a job through it, right?
I got it. Right. So it's helped my, like, personal brand, if you like. I'm very, very picky about the content that I write. I write something probably about every 2 months. People want more stuff from me, but I don't, I don't have enough in me to write good stuff very, very regularly. I don't know how Mark Richardson writes a great column every week. It's unbelievable. It's funny. In talking to him about this, he was like, know your funnel, know your personal funnel. What are you going to do for free, and what's it going to deliver for you? Writing B2B marketing articles about marketing, is what I do for free, and it sort of benefits me, it benefits the company I work for. It's clearly a thing, but it's about resources. Now, I wouldn't, I think if you were to say as a brand only do that, it feels like a pretty exhausting exercise to try and create loads and loads of content. And I've always felt like I have a bias towards paid advertising. That's where I've always, that's what I know better. And I've always felt that the reason we invented ads was to stop us having to knock on every single door on the street and have a conversation, you know, so that we didn't have to do that. And I feel like if you can create a great piece of advertising content that is universally appealing, and can play off a universal truth about your brand or your audience, and speak to everybody in your category, then that's probably going to be more efficient than trying to create loads and loads and loads of smaller things targeted at individuals. I feel that's probably always going to be broadly true.
Interesting. Like, maybe one more thing to wrap it up. Like, there's this notion that the idea of, like, brand building, well, you said it, and sales activation, not versus sales activation, that maybe the entire concept should be dismissed. And I've heard things like brand performance, performance branding. These are different concepts, but anyway, like, you know what I'm saying, it's the idea of almost collapsing them into a single thing. Do you think that's the right move, or should we still see this as very useful concepts and use them in the right way?
It's so hard, isn't it? I have myself toyed with what would happen if we stopped ourselves saying the word brand and stopped ourselves saying the word performance. Would that be helpful? I don't know the answer to that question. I know, you know, I think when you get in, when it becomes a purely semantic debate, I think you get into a world of trouble because you're not actually, you know, you're not making anything, you're not doing anything and adding to the world. I do think that advertising and communication can work in two quite different ways, and that long lasting is one way and immediate is another. But I do also believe that some really great communication can do both at the same time. What happens if you remove the words? I think you probably end up with campaigns, and a really but the requirement to really properly understand the role of each piece of the jigsaw. I think you'd still end up with a spectrum or a funnel or some kind of, you know, that's a spreadsheet, a list of different things doing different kinds of things. I think it's broadly helpful to go, there are certain things that do one thing better, and there's certain things that do another thing slightly better.
Yeah.
But when you split them out, that's when it's dangerous. So I'm not gonna advocate for like a new term, but I'm like many people, I've tried to come up with brand, you know, and there are agencies called things like brand with
beyond, yeah,
ampersand brand performance. I mean, I think broadly brand performance is sort of theory, or bothism is the theory. I'm guilty of talking too much about the theory. I'd much rather get on and do it, but I think trying to do both.
Yeah, it's almost like yin and yang, where you have black and white but in a single shape versus something gray, yeah, that doesn't say anything. I think you're right that it's still a useful concept. Just be mindful of not putting them against each other. All right, Tom, maybe just a final question. If people want to reach out, where can they find you?
As we speak, I still enjoy Twitter. So I'm at Tom Roach on Twitter. I'm also, I think, Tom Roach, or at Tom Roach on LinkedIn. And my blog is thetomroach.com. People keep telling me that I need to optimize my SEO on that and buy tomroach.com, not thetomroach.com. I'm not paying anybody to optimize my SEO. So my blog, Twitter, LinkedIn, DMs are always open. Email at jellyfish. So, but yeah, you know, very, very open to conversations about all sorts of things with people, and see whether that's a kind of new clients or hiring people, speaking to people.
Awesome. This was so much fun talking to you. I learned a lot. Thank you, Tom.
It's been a real pleasure, Steph. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was it for this episode. I really hope you enjoyed. And if you did, please leave a review on iTunes or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. And if you want to get quick updates on the show, but also on new videos, courses, just visit letstalkbranding.be or subscribe to the Substack. That's letstalkbranding.substack.com. See you next week.